This podcast replay is brought to you by American Dream Lending. For purchase or refinance, call 786-802-1727. Fast approvals and quick closings. American Dream Lending. Turning dreams into a lifestyle. Call 786-802-1727 or visit adreamlending.com.
There he is, straight from London. It is Joe Shad. Joe, enjoyed the article with all the fans and the London fans reacting. Martin is actually a guy that's on our chat board a lot here and watching the show. Martin Lydon, one of the guys that you had in your article. But it's not surprising to see that the frustrations across the pond are the same as the ones here in our backyard in the United States.
Yeah, Big O, I was surprised at how passionate the fan base for the Dolphins and the Jaguars are here in England. These fans are very knowledgeable. They ask really smart questions when I engage them both on social media and also in person at the pubs or on the street or going to take one of my many COVID tests. I've ran into people from other countries too, you know, Germany, Italy, France. I saw a Lynn Bowden jersey here. How does someone in Europe end up with a Lynn Bowden jersey? I don't know, but it's kind of neat. You know, there's a lot of complications related to traveling over here, but it is a cool experience.
Yeah, they're a lot smarter about our football than we are about their football, actually, to be honest
with
you.
And I had a lot of fun. I went to my first ever Premier League game. Dave Hyde from the Sun Sentinel picked up tickets for the Liverpool game. And it was a road game for Liverpool, but we saw a bunch of Liverpool goals scored right in front of us. It was cool.
Did you get into the Liverpool chant?
No, because we weren't in the Liverpool section. It was interesting that 90% of the stadium was the opposing crowd, but they were silent. They didn't say anything. And then in the little sliver of the corner, the Liverpool crowd was just singing the whole time.
Right.
It was so interesting. It was, you know.
Yeah. Passion is crazy for that sport, man, worldwide. We're not there yet. But, the world is way ahead of us when it comes to that that sport. There's no doubt about that. All right. So the return of Tua, Joe. I mean, it's really hard because they don't give you so much access to the team, so you don't really get to see the whole practice. I'm hoping that if they're playing him, it's not because he's limited in anything he can do out there.
He looked fine in what we saw about an hour and a half outside of London in the countryside of Ware. It was just a crazy scene. He looked fine. You know, he admitted to us that he's not 100%. And there's no way he would say that unless he was experiencing a reasonable amount of pain. He's going to wear the flak jacket, an enhanced flak jacket. I didn't realize that he actually broke his ribs despite wearing a flak jacket. It's a pretty big hit to break your ribs even though you were wearing a flak jacket. And he's going to, it appears as though he's going to be without another weapon here, Big O. I noticed that Preston Williams was working with the group of players who are most often inactive. Devontae Parker was on a bike, so we know that Tua won't have Devontae Parker. It appears he will not have Preston Williams. We know he will not have Will Fuller. So Hunter Long maybe gets a shot. It appears as though he'll be dressed this week after being a recent scratch. I also noticed that Noah Igbinoghene appears poised to dress, as he was not working with the group of players who are most often inactive. I'm not suggesting that Igbinoghene would start in place of Xavier Howard, but that's certainly an option if Justin Coleman or Nick Needham don't go well. Imagine though, if Igbinoghene goes from the scrap heap and the inactive list to the starting lineup.
Well, hey, listen, the way Justin Coleman's played, I have no problem playing Igbinoghene. I'd rather find out about something that has a future than something that's been an absolute detriment to this team since he actually took the field. What they see in Justin Coleman, I have no idea.
Well, they're paying him $2 million.
Huh?
They're paying him $2 million, so they wanted to give him a chance to beat out Nick Needham. Didn't get it done. Credit to Nick Needham. I agree with you. Igbinoghene probably would play just as well as Justin Coleman. You know what? I would love to see it. Let's see it, right? We're here in a different country. DJ Chark, I think, is the Jaguars' best receiver. He's out, so
Yeah.
Just a Byron Jones cover Marvin Jones, and then maybe put Igbinoghene on, I forget the Jaguars' third receiver, whoever it is.
Keelan Cole or whatever it is, or I'm not sure. Is it him? Now I'm forgetting, actually.
There's another guy. It doesn't matter, though.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. All right, so the other thing that I obviously I'm concerned about, they can run the ball, dude. Miami can't stop the run. So I would imagine that him and Lawrence, both Robinson and Lawrence, have a nice clip per carry. So I would imagine the Dolphin defense is ready for them to attack them on the ground a lot.
Yeah, Big O, listen, we love Jerome Baker as a person and as a player, but he needs to be better, especially against the run. It's crazy, man. Talking to these British fans, they all wanted to know, like, where's Jerome Baker been? Why isn't Jerome Baker making more plays? What happened to Jerome Baker? And, you know, again, these fans are educated. They see that he's missed a few tackles, that he's taken a few poor paths to the ball carrier, that he's had some trouble shedding blocks. Again, we love Jerome Baker as a person and a player. He's fast. He's a good pass rusher. But the Dolphins linebackers need to be better against the run today because Robinson is a load. He's a tough guy.
Yeah, you're right. By the way, Cole's not even on the roster. It's Chenault is right. The third Chenault. Guy. And they have Tavon Austin, too, on that team. And Tyron Johnson is the other guy, too, that they'll use here. So those are the guys you'll see, actually, on the field. So, yeah, I'm expecting them to use Robinson and obviously Lawrence a lot. And this has been a weakness of theirs. Now, when you were talking about Jerome Baker, let me run something by you. So Jones is not playing well at corner. X is not playing well at corner. Baker's not playing well at linebacker. We know several rookies aren't really, or second-year players haven't really played well either. And then I'm watching the Lions, and they got a guy named Charles Harris, who a lot of people, when he was here, said he should be playing at linebacker. And yet now he's playing linebacker for the Lions and has 4 sacks. And so I'm starting to wonder here, is it the people picking the personnel, or is it more about coaches are not getting the max and not figuring out how to use players? Because they cut those 2 offensive linemen, Flowers and Emmanuel or whatever the guy's name is, and they're both contributing to other teams and playing better than your current linemen. So I'm just wondering what the hell is going on the coaching side when I'm watching people, all kinds of people, either disappoint or players that leave from here and are excelling in other places.
I mean, as it relates to Charles Harris, you know, Matt Burke was the defensive coordinator at that time. Obviously, he's not here. And it should be fairly noted that at the end, the Dolphins did try to give Harris an opportunity as a stand-up pass rusher. You know, I don't believe that Charles Harris will ever be a very good NFL player. I think that was a bad pick. But your point in general about coaching, I think I noted this the last time we were together, the Dolphins linebackers coach, Anthony Campanile, he missed the last 2 games due to COVID protocols, or at least 2 recent games due to COVID protocols. That certainly didn't help. Josh Boyer, never a guy to pass the buck. He says, I need to be better. I need to put these guys in a better position. And kudos to him, because clearly he does need to do a better job. And I'm sure Brian Flores is heavily involved in those decisions too. So, I mean, listen, Igbinoghene, bad pick, unless somehow, whether it's for the Dolphins or someone else, he ends up becoming at least an average NFL starter, you know? So, look, I understand your point about coaching. It needs to be better. But the Dolphins coaching staff has also done a really nice job developing some under-the-radar players. Nick Needham, Andrew Van Ginkle, Zach Sealer.
Well, where is
so
Van Ginkle?
Have it both ways.
But where is Van Ginkle?
Yeah, where is Van Ginkle? He needs to be better. He was better last year than he's been this year, and he needs to make a bigger impact on the pass.
Why did it take him 5 weeks to pass to Gaskins out of the backfield? You know, that's stuff that my ass was saying this for the last 5 weeks. Pass to Gaskins and Ahmed out of the backfield because they can create mismatches. And they don't week in and week out until last week. And this is in hindsight. I've been saying it on the pregame show week after week after week. Get those guys involved. There's a lot of things. It's not just the linebackers coach missing. The two starting corners that you're paying a boatload of money, they're playing like dog crap overall. I mean, you look at, there's a lot of things going. Gesicki's underused up until the last week here.
He was targeted here. 7 times in the last game. I mean, listen, you know, just because something's obvious to us, just to be honest, usually when something is obvious to us, it becomes obvious to the coaches. If it's get Devontae Parker the ball more, get Mike Gesicki the ball more, why isn't Myles Gaskin playing? I mean, obviously they had their reason. They didn't just not target these guys or not throw to these guys because they thought that it was, you know, they thought they had a good plan. They thought they had a good idea. And obviously, hey, look, at least the Dolphins have a simplified offense at this time relative to cutting out Charlie Fry. They're going directly from George Godsey to Tua Tagovailoa, and that should help. All right, we know who to blame, or we know who to credit. The Dolphins come out with 3 touchdowns today. Let's give credit to George Godsey. If they come out and get shut out, we know who to blame. George Godsey.
Yeah, it took him forever to move Austin Jackson to guard, too. I mean, it just
– Well, I don't know about forever. There's 3 games.
There's a lot of stuff going on with this team on the coaching side that I – there's a lot of things I can question. All right, we'll wrap it up with this. What's the prediction? What do you got going on today? Who wins and how?
Well, I made my prediction in the Palm Beach Post prior to the knowledge that Xavien Howard, Devontae Parker, and Preston Williams would all be out. So the prediction that I made in the newspaper was 34 for the Dolphins and 0 for the Jaguars, 34-0. I would adjust that at this time, and I get the chance to do that with you here. So I'll adjust it to 28-14 Dolphins. Dolphins still cover. Dolphins still will win handily. I just don't know about the 34-0 score. All 4 Jacksonville Jaguars reporters picked the Jaguars. They said that this is if they're going to win any game, this is the game. And that fascinates me, the perception of the Dolphins.
All right, whatever you do, since you are there in London, don't shake hands with Urban Meyer. You don't know where those fingers have been. Okay.
I hear you, brother. Be well.
All right, baby.
See you soon.
There you go. That's the American Dream Lending Miami Dolphins Weekly Report with the one and only Joe Shad. Follow him on Twitter @ShadJoe.